discussion with my colleague Patrick Tucker, the Defense One technology editor, picking up things way early and very helpful. Right now, Patrick is going to report on something that's in the news because the administration and members of Congress have accelerated the American public's knowledge of these matters. This is about nuclear weapon in space. The Space Treaty of 1967 forbids the militarization of low Earth orbit, medium Earth orbit, high Earth orbit. However, right now there is a report, and it's repeated from the Biden administration, this is not whispering, that Russia intends, or maybe already has, deployed a nuclear weapon into low Earth orbit. Why, Patrick? What advantage is there in exploding a nuclear weapon in space?
Well, yes, thank you. This is something that happened last week. As soon as Representative Congressman Mike Turner from Ohio went to Twitter and said that there was an imminent destabilizing foreign military capability that was a serious national security threat that the White House was sitting on. Naturally, it was only a matter of hours before everyone figured out exactly what he was referring to. And yes, it's this plan on behalf of Russia to launch a nuclear weapon into low Earth orbit, where, if it were to be detonated, would have serious and possibly catastrophic effects on low Earth orbit satellites. So this is something that we know firsthand because the United States in 1962 detonated a 1.4 megaton device about 250 miles above the Pacific Ocean. It was called Starfish Prime. It created a geomagnetic storm that had a terrible effect on the satellites at the time. And thankfully, in 1962, these were not many. But now, we are so much more dependent on satellites, and particularly low Earth orbit, for commercial communication, for just a variety of things, certainly for military, both imaging of the globe and communication as well. Everything that we have today is so reliant on satellites. There are a handful of satellites that the military uses that are hardened against electromagnetic disruption like that, and they tend to fly at very different orbits, much higher orbits. But make no mistake, while this would be bad for the U.S. military, they could recover from it. It would be pretty catastrophic for civilian life. You would see tremendous disruption almost immediately. Ironically, though, that would probably affect Russia, too. So what you have here is a threat that it's a little bit like the doomsday machine in Dr. Strangelove. If they ever actually lit this thing off, it's not a technological, sophisticated device at all. If they were to deploy it, they would be as adversely affected, if not more so. So what this amounts to is probably another scare tactic, a sort of psychological threat from Vladimir Putin to the world, reminding the world that if you thwart him too much, then you know who knows what they might do. They're a country of tremendous capability. But it's part of a pattern of naming a threat and then backing away from it to gain some sort of concession after he's basically intimidated the world.
The Economist magazine proposed, just immediately after Congressman Turner made the announcement, three possibilities, and I'm wondering if you have any indication which is most likely. One, it's a weapon that can be launched quickly and is not in orbit now. Two, it's in orbit, a nuclear weapon. And three, it's a nuclear-powered device in some fashion that would target other satellites of indeterminate means, maybe with a laser. Is there any indication that it's one of those three?
There was some, not long after these stories broke, there was some indication that it might, in fact, be a nuclear-powered weapon and have a reactor core in it that would still have the job of electromagnetic warfare in space aimed at satellites. And the reason you would have it nuclear-powered is so that it wouldn't the discharge of the weapon wouldn't affect the satellite's ability to collect solar power from the sun. We know this because there are some preliminary sketches of such a device that already exist in open source that Russia may be working on. But there's not a ton of sense of doing that because the primary thing you'd use a nuclear-powered spacecraft for is interstellar travel. You just need to be able to continue to go further and further into space, and including in spaces where you can't access the sun. Things that are in our orbit, solar collection in space is 10 times more efficient than on Earth. So you can use solar-powered satellites for virtually anything, and it would be a lot less controversial. So if you're going to stick an electromagnetic weapon in space, you would probably just work through the problem of having it be solar-powered, because then no one would necessarily know, or there wouldn't be any huge controversy about the nuclear power element. So why create something that's less controversial than the thing that it looks like, which is a big nuclear bomb in space? So that alone suggests that it's some sort of nuclear it's an actual nuclear weapon in space, which would have much more effect. In terms of whether it's there now or very soon, the jury is still out on that. The White House has said that it is not something that has been launched yet, but that at the same time, 5 days before this announcement, Russia launched a Soyuz 2 1V rocket with a classified military payload. There's some folks that are speculating that that could be it. So we do not yet know if it's about to be in space or is already in space, but the White House says not yet.
We move from low Earth orbit to the Pacific Ocean because Patrick is reporting the U.S. Navy's thinking about unmanned surface warfare in some fashion. There is a photograph accompanying the article about how the Navy is envisioning hundreds of thousands of drones. These look like, I don't know, they look like outboards in Hawaii racing between islands. Is this what we're thinking about, these drones that look like a ship with, what, outboard riggers?
Right, right. So those are two examples of the Sea Hunter. It's this 100-foot, basically, ghost ship that the Navy has developed. It could potentially carry missiles, or it could not. That is an example of one of the larger drones that they're talking about. But one of the things that Admiral Sam Paparo, the head of U.S. Pacific Fleet, said in giving his remarks last week at in San Diego at FCA, is that what you want to do is create a lot of obstacles using a variety of different means. So there's going to be a lot of undersea drones, and the Defense Department has recently contracted with Anduril to develop very kind of medium-sized submarine drones. There's going to be efforts to kind of clog the air with aerial drones that can stay loitering for long periods of time. And, of course, you have big ghost ships like this. So really you want to look at all of the different domains as critical to this plan to, even though he didn't say this explicitly, it's pretty well implied, I think, kind of really crowd out the Taiwan Strait with these capabilities to potentially frustrate Chinese naval maneuvers there, or, if you like, aggressive Chinese maritime actions that they're taking against neighbors like Singapore or like the Philippines.
You end your reporting with a remark that is extremely fetching but hard to interpret. We are in the middle of another epochal change, and that is the dawn, and I do mean the dawn, of the information revolution. What are we looking at here? The robots? Is this back to robot war? We're talking about Terminator thinking. Is that it, Patrick?
Well, it's not just the actual platforms themselves. It's not the actual just things floating in the water and the air. Those are important. What really Paparo here is talking about is the effect of digitized intelligence that is concentrated through AI and then distributed far faster than an adversary can detect, collect, and distribute intelligence to those platforms, to those robots that are in the sea, the sky, and under the surface. He's really talking about the pace of warfare and how information technology, we are beginning to see how it's going to accelerate that pace. But it's really not just through the robots, it's through the information collection capabilities and the processing capabilities, and then the dissemination of that to this wide variety of platforms at once. And as soon as that revolution really begins to take hold, the U.S. military is working very hard to make that the norm now, but they have a very, in many ways, it's kind of a primitive baseline to adapt from. Russia and China are there already in a little bit, but they're much smaller. They don't do joint operations as well. So that is the race that characterizes the next basically two decades, is to not just deploy robots, but to accelerate sensing, sense making, and distribution of data across a wide number of ships, sailors, drones, satellites, you name it.
Patrick Tucker, Defense One Technology Editor. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.